Today's episode is brought to you by Polar Sound. Don't you just hate it when you've gone through the entire process of writing a script, shooting a film, and then you get to the editing room only to realize your dialogue wasn't recorded clearly and you're missing sound effects? Or when you record a podcast on Zoom that just doesn't sound great? Then look no further than Polar Sound, your one-stop shop for all of your audio-related needs. Welcome back to another edition of Pistons Thoughts. I'm your host, Jordan Letterman, and it has been a little bit of time since we last spoke. So much has happened. We don't have the time or the brain power to go over every single thing that's happened since then, but let's just get into the fun. It's the off-season, and we're starting to get back to a sense of normalcy as it goes with the NBA off-season. Everything's been pushed back, everything's been affected, but real quick, let's just say that the bubble worked. It was ambitious, but it was so well thought out, and we got some of the best basketball we've seen in a long time. The bubble was fun, the NBA accomplished their goal, the Lakers won the championship, and things just seem normal again there. But I'm not here to talk about the NBA in general, I'm here to talk about our Detroit Pistons, who are going into one of the most critical off-seasons they've had, possibly in the last 20 years. To recap, this team has essentially been stripped down to its core. Luke Kennard is the longest tenured Piston. Andre Drummond was moved for peanuts at the trade deadline, but that cleared a bunch of cap space, which made it an attractive job for OKC right-hand man Troy Weaver to step into the party. And that gives Pistons fans some hope, because Troy Weaver was next in line for a long time. He was seen as one of the rising executives in the league, in the conversation for almost every single GM opening that's come up over the last few years. And this guy is seen as one of the best talent evaluators in the game, which is important considering that the Pistons are not a great team right now. They're going to have good draft picks for the foreseeable future. Maybe not that long, but at least for the next couple of years. And having a guy at the top who actually knows how to evaluate talent and actually knows how to make correct draft picks and actually knows how to utilize cap space is going to be a pretty exciting thing for the Pistons going forward, because you have a summer where the Pistons are one of only five teams with cap space. They're going to have estimated around $30 to $33 million to spend. And priority number one, retain Christian Wood. Now, here's the thing about Christian Wood. He was a bright spot in an otherwise really depressing Pistons season. He is essentially our most promising young player right now. Granted, we all love Sekou, and we all think Sekou's ceiling is really high, but as of today, right now, Christian Wood showed us that at an NBA level, especially after Andre Drummond was traded, he can start in this league, he can put up points in this league, he can make a difference in this league. And I think having a 25-year-old Christian Wood under contract for the foreseeable future is how you should go about this. Here's the thing. You might have to overpay a little bit to get him. He might be in the $12 to $15 million a year range. And I know some people don't want to pay that. He might even cost a little bit more, but here's why it's worth it. Because by the time that you're in a position to really utilize those extra couple million dollars in cap space that you might have to overpay, by the time his contract's up, you'll be in a position to use those again. But until then, for the next 3 to 4 years, you know, just front load the contract. If you can't get him to agree to the biannual exception or whatever that is, where it's like 9.7 mil, where he won't count against the cap for more than like 1 point something mil, if you can't get that, then just front load the contract. And that way, in the next, even, you know, maybe 3 years down the line when the Pistons are ready to be competitive again, you have that cap space, but you still have a great foundational piece who's 25 years old and has really showed that without Andre Drummond here, you give him the keys to the car and he's going to put up points, he's going to put up rebounds, he's going to make a difference. And he's an exciting player to watch. He's the most exciting player to watch right now on the Pistons. You know, that's no disrespect to Derrick Rose or Blake Griffin, but this man dunks everything within 30 feet of the basket. I mean, you got people launching threes from 30 feet. Christian Wood's got those Space Jam Michael Jordan arms that just can dunk from half court. He dunks every single thing that he touches, and that's one of the most exciting Pistons we've had in forever. So that's step one. retain Christian Wood at almost any cost. Granted, I do have a ceiling. You know, you can't go pay him $25 million a year. You probably can't even come close to 20. But do what you can. Keep him in Detroit for a long time because he's a building block and we don't have many of those going around right now. The second priority of the offseason, for me at least, is do what you can. Just throw the bag at Brandon Ingram. Even with retaining Christian Wood, you have the money to throw the bag at Brandon Ingram. Brandon's a restricted free agent. New Orleans is probably going to match everything that comes his way, but with COVID, with the uncertainty going forward, with Zion in town, Drew's making a lot of money, New Orleans has some cap decisions they have to make. Granted, I think they'd be silly not to pay Brandon Ingram, who's a young all-star. But as the Pistons, you're in a position to put this pressure on these teams, tie up the cap space, throw the bag at him, see what happens. Worst case, you get your money back. Best case, like I said, you have a young upcoming all-star who will automatically be the best player on your team right now. Now, my next sort of free agent destination, by the way, I'm pretty much going off of this Piston-powered article I wrote a couple months ago, so go check this out. It's the Pistons' offseason free agency to-do list. Malik Beasley. I like Malik Beasley a lot. I would have loved for the Pistons to have gotten him out of Denver before Minnesota did, but I digress. We didn't get it done, and that's okay. So here's the thing. Minnesota, with the first pick in the NBA draft, in theory, they might select Anthony Edwards, and if they do that, how much money are they willing to commit to Malik Beasley in free agency to keep him with Anthony Edwards, who plays the same position? I mean, if you draft Anthony Edwards, that's your shooting guard of the future. Now, they might go a different direction with the LaMelo Ball. They might trade the pick, etc., but they don't have a ton of money to spend this summer, and with that number one pick comes a higher price tag than, let's say, if they got the 5th, 6th, or 7th pick. They're not going to have a ton of money to throw around. They're going to have to go over the cap to keep Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez. I think the Pistons can make a competitive offer. You, again, may need to overpay a little bit for Malik Beasley, but he's younger than Christian Wood, and it's the same concept. Once Malik got to Minnesota and he was playing minutes, he was putting up 20 points a game in the NBA. Here's the thing. You can say empty numbers, bad team, etc., but to be able to score 20 points a game in the NBA on any team, you're still playing NBA competition, right? It's not like you're going up against a bunch of G League guys here. You're still playing NBA competition. So I get the empty numbers, bad team argument, but he's shown that he could score at the NBA level. Like I said, I liked him when he was in Denver not putting up these numbers and getting these minutes. I think going after Malik Beasley could be a really sneaky move. Again, he's a restricted free agent. Minnesota can match anything, but will they, if the offer is right, they draft Anthony Edwards, or if they just don't know that they want to commit all this money, especially with the uncertainty going forward? So those are sort of my two restricted free agents. See what you can do. The Brandon Ingram one's sort of a pipe dream. The Malik Beasley one, it depends on the series of events that happens before free agency comes, but I think it could be a good move, and you may ask, where does that put Luke Kennard? Well, Luke was rumored to be shopped around the trade deadline. Maybe you can get something for him. Or Luke is a super six man with Malik Beasley starting. I mean, they could play together too. Casey loves his three-guard lineups. But I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. Granted, you got to make a decision when Luke's payday comes next year. But I think that getting talent where you can, when you can, is important. It's sort of like you draft the best position available in the draft, right? That's sort of what bad teams are supposed to do. You're supposed to stock up on young talent, even if there's a little bit of a positional overlap. So moral of the story, go get Malik Beasley, go get Brandon Ingram, figure it out later. That's what, you know, who cares? Just get the players here, get the talent here. Like I said, best player available that you can get. Now my next idea is going to get Harry Giles. I don't understand why the Sacramento Kings declined his team option earlier this year before the season started. It literally doesn't make any sense. Now, Harry Giles does have some injury concerns. He really has struggled to stay healthy, but when he's played, he's just a solid five. He's a solid center in the Pistons, who I'm assuming will not retain Thon Maker and will basically only have Justin Patton under contract, who's not even guaranteed for next season. So I think getting someone like Harry Giles, who's young. It is a little bit of a risk, but I think that risk drives the price down. But I think he's a promising young player, and if he can stay healthy, again, big if. I don't like building around injured guys. But it's not like you're signing him to a multi-year contract for a ton of money to be your starting center. That's not what we're doing here. Granted, his ideal role is probably off the bench. If everything went well and he was healthy and he played up to his potential, yeah, he could be your starting center next to Christian Wood of the future. But that's not where you're getting him. It's not like, you know, it's not the whole argument of getting your Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose and Luke Kennard that you're building around who are injury-prone players. He's a role player, Harry Giles, right now. And I think it's worth the risk for a young talent like that to take a flyer on it. So the last step in the free agency plan is just, you know, you're sort of 1 year contracts, you know, give Langston a payday if you can, but for 1 year, you know, get these veterans for 1 year, stabilize the roster, you know, stabilize the culture, get your veteran presence. Let Sekou learn from him. Let your rookie, hopefully Killian Hayes, learn from him. Just get these 1 year deals. Keep your options open for next summer. That's the free agency plan. But what I really want to happen is the Pistons to use that cap space to absorb bad contracts in exchange for taking on another pick. Polar Sound is the one-stop shop for location sound mixing, dialogue editing, sound design, Foley, ADR, and mixing for anything from short films, podcasts, to animations, and more. Whether you have some poorly recorded dialogue that just needs to be cleaned up, need some monster sound design, or just a solid mix to meet loudness standards for your project submission, Polar Sound is equipped to handle any audio obstacle for you. Right now, Polar Sound has a special offer for 20% off your first full-service post-production audio experience. Just mention the Pistons Thoughts podcast when you email contact@polar-sound.com. Again, that's contact@polar-sound.com to give your project an immersive soundscape today. So I think that this year's draft is going to be one of those where teams are just selling picks because, again, the salary cap is going to be more stable come draft time next month, but there's still the uncertainty going forward. And as this draft isn't seen as, you know, one of the better drafts in recent memory, the top isn't necessarily as clear as it has been in the past, but there is a lot of value later down the line. But again, like every draft, nothing is a sure thing here, but this one especially, there's no consensus top pick. You know, there's sort of a general, we know who a few of the top five will be, but we don't know for sure what the order is going to be. And with those things said, I think that teams are going to be looking to save some money by, you know, getting rid of a mid first round pick in exchange for taking on a bad contract. Look at the Minnesota Timberwolves, who have the number one pick, but they also have 17 and 33. And like I said, they're kind of close to the cap line, and drafting these picks, all of them, and retaining Malik Beasley and Juan Hernan Gomez is going to be sort of tough to do. So I think that there's a chance that they may opt to either trade back from the first spot, or they may be looking to get rid of that 17 and maybe 33rd pick altogether. It's sort of complicated with them. They have one big contract, James Johnson, who's making $16 million next year. But the caveat is that it's a player option, and he likely won't opt in before the draft. So that makes that whole thing kind of complicated. But if they can convince him to opt in, trade him, give the Pistons the 17 pick in exchange for taking on James Johnson's contract, that's a win-win for everybody. Except maybe James Johnson, but, you know, he's making $16 million. It is what it is. Now, the Portland Trailblazers are another team to look out for because they have the 16th pick. They have a big contract in Trevor Ariza's $12.8 million. They have Rodney Hood's $6 million player option. Would they be looking to shed some cap space? The Trailblazers, you know, with Melo and Dame and CJ, you know, their window isn't that long. Granted, I love the Blazers. I love Dame. I love Melo. I love what they're all about. But they sort of got to either cash in relatively soon to make a run at this thing, or time's just going to run out, I think. So it could be worth them clearing some cap space, giving up a first-round pick to do it, and see what happens there. But the kicker with this one, like the Minnesota one, is Rodney Hood's player option. Same situation. He's got to opt in before the draft, which he probably won't do. And Ariza's contract is only $1.8 million guaranteed. So A, do they want to move him in the first place? B, if they do, is it worth the pick? Or just don't pick up the contract and you're only on the line for $1.8 million? Lots of questions. I don't have any answers. But the Celtics are an interesting team because they already have their roster committed for next year. They have the 14th, 26th, and 30th picks. There's no way that they're making all those picks. I've seen a lot of trades proposed that the Pistons can trade out of their 7th spot for 14, 26, and 30. In my opinion, not worth it. I mean, in any other draft, maybe, but I don't know. It seems like, yes, more shots at it is a better thing in general, but at the 7th spot, you're going to get someone that you know you want. You know, you have Killian Hayes, you have Tyrese Halliburton, you have a bunch of other guys in that 7 range that you will like. So here's how I look at the draft. I think that LaMelo and Anthony Edwards are probably going to be the consensus 1 and 2. I don't know that that's the draft order it's going to go. It just sort of depends on the team's picking. But I think those are the consensus top 2 players in the draft. But like 3 to 15, it is so close. It's so tight. And at 7, you're going to get someone you really want. And maybe there's a way to get that mid-first round pick without giving up 7 and seeing if one of your guys falls out of the top 14. You know, it's one of those things where if you can scoop up a pick 15 to even 22, someone's falling. Someone's falling that used to be a projected lottery pick that's still good, and for whatever reason, their draft stock was falling. But you're going to be able to get someone. I just don't think it's worth giving up that 7th pick in order to do so. So then you have the Philadelphia 76ers, who just hired Doc Rivers, who it's kind of funny. I think Doc is a good coach. I think he's a great person. I think he's an incredible leader. But he has been a part of multiple 3-1 leads being given up. You know, he's a constant underachieving playoff coach, minus that 08 championship, obviously. You pair him with the constantly underachieving playoff team in the Philadelphia 76ers. It's going to be interesting to see if they're a match made in heaven or if they bring out the worst in each other's underachieving abilities. But the Sixers have no flexibility with Al Horford, Tobias Harris, Embiid, Simmons, etc. They have no financial flexibility. Al Horford makes so much money over the next few years, and it's not even worth going near that with a 10-foot pole, even not with COVID around. You don't want him within any feet of you. They do have the 21st pick this year and their own first-round picks for the foreseeable future. It's just the issue with this sort of deal is their 21st pick and their first-round picks for the foreseeable future, they're not worth it, because no matter what happens, as long as they have Embiid and or Simmons, they're going to be a good regular season team. They're going to be winning games. They're not going to be a lottery team. So it's just not worth taking on that monster Al Horford deal for a couple of late first round picks. That's not worth it. That's not how you utilize this money. But I threw them on this list because they're in such a hopeless financial situation, and maybe there's a way to exploit it. Maybe grabbing Matisse Thybulle and Josh Richardson in the process and getting picks. I don't even know that that's worth it. The point is, the Sixers can't offer enough for me to consider it, and if they could, it probably wouldn't be worth it for them. I don't know what they're going to do, but the Pistons are in a position to help if they need to. Maybe it's a three-team deal situation. The Pistons could be in a great spot to facilitate a lot of three-team trades this summer, and I think they're going to utilize it. Troy Weaver has talked about that sort of thing a lot, taking on bad money for good assets. So as of right now, the NBA draft is November 18th. Things are going to change before then, especially now that the offseason is finally here. I mean, you got to think about it. There were a lot of underachieving teams in the playoffs this year and in the bubble in general. There were a lot of overachieving teams. You look at a team like the Nuggets, who I thought before the bubble would have been looking to move a Gary Harris contract, a Will Barton contract, but they had an incredible time in the bubble. They really pushed the playoffs. You know, coming back from 3-1 twice in any situation ever is so impressive, and they figured that out. And I don't think there's any scenario where they move a contract and a pick to get rid of bad money. Now, maybe they use those mainly because Gary Harris played really well once he got back and into his rhythm. And I think they might believe that with Will Barton, they could have pushed the Lakers even farther. It's going to be interesting. They're going to be a good team for a long time, but you look at a team like the Bucks, like the Sixers. Those are the sort of teams that did not get the job done, even the Rockets. And it's going to be interesting what they do, whether they panic, whether they move contracts with picks to clear space to do something else that doesn't work. I think it's going to be really interesting, and that's something you got to look for every playoffs, is the underachieving teams are the ones most likely to shake it up. You know, the Sixers already fired the coach, D'Antoni left Houston. So those are the sort of teams to keep an eye on. And then you have a team like the Suns, who really played well. They went 8-0 in the bubble. It wasn't quite enough to get in the playoffs, which is tragic because they were really exciting to watch. But you have a team like that who maybe they're willing to cash in on someone like a Blake Griffin, even though it's a risk. But maybe they're in a position to do so with their young team where they can take that risk right now, where someone like a Blake or a D. Rose might push them over the top. Now, the other night on Fox Sports Detroit, they showed some highlights from the Pistons scrimmages these past couple weeks, and there was some promising stuff in there. Luke Kennard looks healthy. I really think that if he's healthy, which I know is an if, but everybody's saying this isn't going to be a recurring thing, we're going to see about that. But if he's healthy, give him 20 shots a game. He's putting up 20 points minimum. I'm telling you, and I predicted this last season, and a lot of people gave me shit for it, but I said Luke Kennard was going to average 16 this year. He averaged 15.8. I think if he kept playing, especially when the Pistons sort of blew it all up, I think he would have averaged even more than that. I really think that on this team now, Luke Kennard is going to average 20 a game. The issues in the past with him not shooting enough, I think A, is a confidence issue, which, you know, we just want him to shoot. But B, you had Reggie Jackson and Andre Drummond taking a lot of shots away. And that's why he ultimately didn't end up starting as much as he should have. He's a starting quality shooting guard on our team. He's our best shooting guard by far. And he's arguably the second or third best player on this team right now. Behind Derrick Rose, Blake Griffin, you know, you got Christian Wood in the mix. But you have those four guys. Like, I think that give Luke more shots, and he's going to put up 20 a night. And he looked really good in the scrimmage, creating for himself. That's an underrated thing about him. He's not just a shooter. He can create for himself off the dribble. He's a great passer. He's creating for others. And I think he is someone that you still build around. But if the right offer comes available, you take it. Here's the thing about Luke. Is his contract extension, I think, comes up this summer. He'll be a restricted free agent next summer. And you have to decide if you want to pay him. But what it really comes down to is he's probably the best asset you have to move. And if that's the sacrifice you need to make to put yourself in a better position, you have to do it. You know, the NBA, that's what it's about. It's about team building. It's about using your assets wisely. It's about keeping them when you see fit. And it's about using them in deals when you also see fit. So it just sort of depends. But he looked really good. I'm excited to see what he does this year, especially, you know, on an arguably bad team. But another thing, before I get into the rest of the scrimmage clips, it's like, if Blake and D-Rose are healthy, and Luke, granted, again, huge ifs, and you can't count on those, but if they were, the Pistons could make the playoffs. Like, it's not inconceivable that they make the playoffs with those guys, assuming they retain Christian Wood and seeing what else they do this summer. Now, some of the other clips were showing Sekou playing really well. Granted, I'd like to see him. This is something we got on Andre about a lot, but I'd like to see Sekou be stronger around the rim. You know, he's got a nice touch. He's got nice finesse. But I would like to see him put his body into people more and just use his athleticism to dunk the ball more. Give me some more dunks. That's something we dealt with Stanley Johnson, too. Give me some more dunks, Sekou. But he's doing a nice job. It looks like his dribbling's getting a little tighter. That's something big that I think he still needs to work on. And that was a big point that I had for him going into the summer. Is because he's got a decent handle, it's just very loose, and if he tightens that up, he's going to be able to get to the basket easier, he's going to be able to get to the basket more effectively, and that's going to create open looks for him and his teammates. You know, his shot's looking good, he changed it up a little bit this summer, I think he could still work on being in a shooting position when the ball gets to him instead of doing another hop once he gets the ball. But I digress. Overall, he looked really good. I think that he could have a really solid second season. I think we're still a year or two away from seeing him sort of really be a solid NBA player, but I think we're going to see some good things from him this year, and I'm really excited about it. And hey, look, I didn't think he was going to really do much other than play defense this past season. In those first 8 to 10 games after he, or when he started his first 8 to 10 games, he was playing really well, and nobody saw that coming. And I know that there's a lag in scouting reports, and, you know, once teams sort of keyed in on him, it got worse for him. But you got to keep in mind, he's coming from overseas, doesn't speak great English. I mean, he's better now, but I mean, it's such a huge adjustment. And I think that him being comfortable, knowing the team, knowing the plays, knowing the schemes, I think having this summer of development with the Pistons is going to be huge for him. I think he's going to be solid this year, but I think next year is when we'll really see the jump. But we'll see. Hopefully I'm wrong, and hopefully we see it this year, and it's just a great season. Then you got Svi Mykhailiuk, who was a really surprising bright spot this past season. I mean, as the season went on, he started playing more. He's just an absolute sniper. Granted, he wasn't finishing great around the rim, and we have that problem with Bruce Brown too. But in the scrimmage videos, I mean, his shot looks good as ever. His off-ball movement's great. See, people have always compared Luke to JJ Redick because basically they're white and they can shoot. But I think Svi has such a better similarity to JJ Redick, and not just because they're white, but because of the off-ball movement and just a textbook-looking jump shot. I think that if he keeps that up with the off-ball move, I mean, like, the off-ball movement is J.J. Redick-esque. It's a little bit Rip Hamilton-esque. You know, I think Casey can use some more off-screens to get Svi open. But I think, I mean, Svi could be really lethal in that dribble handoff motions with Blake Griffin, like we saw Reggie Bullock and Wayne Ellington do the past couple of seasons. I just think Svi is a really good piece, and I did not see this coming when we traded for him. But props to Stefanski for getting Svi for Reggie Bullock, because I think Svi is going to be hitting shots all year. I think he's going to be a really good piece in the rotation going forward. So we're a month away from the draft. We're a month and a half, maybe less, away from free agency opening. I guess we don't really have dates for that. It usually comes, you know, days after the draft. We'll see what happens. But now that the offseason's here, for real this time, for the entire NBA, we're going to start to see some shit go down. And yes, the immediate future looks kind of bleak for the Pistons, especially going off of how last season ended. But we got a new man in charge, Troy Weaver. We got a great draft pick coming up. We have a lot of cap flexibility. I mean, I don't think this needs to be a 5-year rebuild. I really think that, you know, and we'll see how this season goes. Like I said, if people are healthy, this is a competing for the 8th spot team, but it's different because it's a team full of young players with a few veterans rather than a team full of veterans with a few young players. That's what we have loathed about the Pistons in the past, is they're just pretty much a veteran team going all in for no reason to get the 8th seed. Whereas in this case, if you're led by Blake Griffin, Derrick Rose, and a bunch of young players, and that's what gets you to the 8th seed, that is so much more promising, and it's so much more acceptable than pushing all your chips to the table with a bunch of veterans and getting the 8th seed. So I know that there are people out there who want to tank, lose all the games in the world, and get the number one pick. But as we saw, we got pushed back 2 spots in the lottery. That's not how it works anymore. We were a half game away from having the second worst record in the league, and we ended up with the 7th pick in the draft. So I don't want to hear that. So if your young team can get you to the playoffs, that is huge. And that's really promising for your future. And it's sort of like a Miami Heat approach. It's sort of like a Memphis Grizzlies approach. Granted, they didn't make the playoffs, but they were close. I mean, if Jaren didn't get injured, it might be a different story. But if you can build a team with young players, with solid veterans, but it's mainly young players who are developing in a rebuild situation, and that young team with your few veterans gets you close or into the playoffs, I don't want to hear the tanking bullshit, because that's huge, and that means that your young players are winning games at an NBA level. And that's all you can ask for in the rebuilding level of a franchise, is that your young players are doing good things and you can keep them and build around them and make them do even better, bigger things in the future. All in all, immediate future, not as bright, But I think we're a couple years away from this being a really promising franchise because we finally are laying the foundational pieces to build this thing right, to build it from the ground up. It's not from the ground up. We're like starting at like the fifth floor. We have some good pieces. It's not like we're starting with the foundation of the house here. We've got, and I know we're talking about a five-story already house. It's going to be a big house at the end of this. But what I'm saying is you're not starting at the ground floor. You're starting from the fifth, maybe even the sixth floor, depending on how Sekou progresses this summer, how Bruce Brown gets even better. But the point is, it's a hopeful spot. And again, it's not good this second. But I think we're in a spot that we haven't been in a while where it doesn't look like we're going to be stuck in mediocrity forever. And that, somehow, 12 years later, is all I can say. But that's all I got for now. Thanks for listening. I will be back sooner than I was last time. Head to the Twitter at Pistons Thoughts. We've made it this far together with no Pistons basketball. We can make it a little bit further as things start to happen for us. Until next time.